the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey, everybody, welcome to episode 64 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Gil-Tackett. Today on the podcast, it's going to be another great one. I'm super excited. So today, I will give you a quick update on some of the projects that I'm responsible for at the CCFR. I'm going to bring Wilson on. She's going to discuss a couple of things that she's responsible for at the CCFR. So you're going to get a great update. And then after the break, I'm going to bring on Barry Holland, who is an ex-JTF-2. I believe he did some military contract. He's got this really interesting career, really interesting resume, but what we're talking to him today about is the fact that he is the author of a book called No More Mr. Nice Guy, which apparently is the definitive guide to defending yourself in Canada legally with or without firearms. So I'm really excited to have that conversation. Now, I did two interviews with Barry. One interview you're going to hear today, one you're going to hear next week. Barry lives in a rural area, so our Skype connection wasn't great. So there's some gaps. You don't miss any of the dialogue, but it's like the connection was waiting. It stopped and then it just played after. So there's some small gaps. It's a little bit tedious, but the information that comes out of this interview is so valuable and so intriguing. It just takes you to a lot of places. So I'm really excited for you guys to hear that. Now, let's get the show on the road. So first, a quick update from me. So I was getting a couple of people on social media were commenting, hey, whatever happened on the National Education Program, is that still coming out? And, you know, if you're interested in knowing what's going on at CCFR, listen to the podcast, because not only are you going to get updates on a week-to-week basis, but you're also going to get that editorializing. You're going to get that conversation where you're going to get insight and reasons why we do things, not just what we've done. And you're going to get a lot of information that you wouldn't get anywhere else, and especially from a written statement or what have you. So I realize I'm not a professional broadcaster. I'm sure these podcasts are not especially entertaining to listen to. But if you're concerned with what's going on at the CCFR or what we're doing with your membership money, this is the best place to get that information as fast as you can. So not only listen to the podcast, but make sure you're sharing it with people. And if you see people asking questions, maybe do me a favor and just help me out a little bit and just post a link to the podcast. Just go, hey man, here's episode 64. Rod talks all about that campaign that you're curious about. You know, just, we got to get people, we're putting that information out, but people actually have to pick it up and read it or listen to it, right? So now concerning that project, if you remember, I've talked about it before on the podcast, and then I've actually given updates both on Facebook Lives and then in written form before. But basically the status of that project is it was composed of a bunch of different projects, actually really about three or four different projects. So assets, we'll call them. And then the fourth or fifth part of this project was, this campaign was the dissemination process. So that dissemination process was mainstream media, it was commercials, and it was feet on the street. And that part of it doesn't make any sense now, because people are concerned with not dying from a disease. They're concerned with the total economic obliteration of the country, of the world, really, and about food and toilet paper. So, you know, I'm not going to spend that money yet. You know, we have it sitting here, we're ready. So when the exact time that we need it arrives, and I actually have a tool or two that I still have to finish developing before we can release that, then we will do that. Other than that, we're just not going to do it, because I'm not going to waste that initiative, right? Now, as time goes by, we are still developing those tools, and those tools are very useful. So let's talk about one that was completed last week. So part of that campaign was the redevelopment of gundebate.ca to be an online quiz. The whole site is driven by a quiz. Now, the reason why that tool is really important, one of the most difficult challenges that we have is the majority of Canadians out there that don't own a gun or don't know people that own guns, never had conversations about that. We're going to call them the undecided, and they are the majority. They don't really care about that topic. It doesn't really mean anything to them, but they fall prey to the government, who is malevolent right now. They fall prey to anti-gun groups who are malevolent. And I'll tell you why. I'm not just saying that as an insult. I'm going to back that up in a second. And they also fall prey to the CBC in particular and other mainstream media, which are malevolent also. And the reason why I say these people are malevolent is because they're lying to people. And for some reason, lying to people has it's apparently totally acceptable now. It's they just call that politics, or they call that communications, right? Comms. You know, and, you know, maybe call me old school, but I don't think you should lie to people. And I don't think lying to people makes a better society. I think it contributes greatly to moral corrosion and the decline of societies, to the point where people don't know what to believe because they have authority figures and telling them something that's not true. And they have people that aren't authority figures saying, no, that's not true. And here's the backup. But it creates a conflict in their minds where they're like, well, but the government wouldn't lie to me, would they? Their role is to give me the facts. And, you know, that's hard for some people to accept. So anyway, I don't want to go on too long about that. But what we need to do is we need to reach non-gun-owning Canadians and say, you've been lied to. The government and anti-gun groups and the media are telling you that we have weak gun laws. They're saying there's no red flag laws. They're saying that you don't have to show a license to buy a firearm. There's no licensing required, basically. They're telling you that our laws are trying to convince you that our laws are just like the states. But that is what you're getting. And so anyway, part of that is to educate people. The way that we're going to do that is a redevelopment of gundebate.ca, where you have an online quiz. We have an incentive even to do the quiz. Basically, there is a basic quiz. If you pass it, it's 15 true and false questions. If you pass the quiz, you get entered automatically for a free draw for a $50 Amazon gift certificate. We're giving away 50 of them. And you unlock the advanced quiz. The advanced quiz is 10 questions, multiple choice. If you pass that, you get automatically entered yet again. So the quiz is fun. It's super, it's multimedia feature rich. It's extremely deep. Basically, we give you all of the answers to all the questions. You can either watch a video in advance and get all the answers, or you can just take the quiz, see how you do. And then the results page has, I actually had to research, write, perform, edit, upload, and implement 34 videos so that there's at least video content. You hear it right from an instructor in good standing with the RCMP Canadian Firearms Program. All of the references, the law references are in there. There's external links. There's everything. It's really, really a deep site. And it was in a tremendous amount of work to do. The reason why another gun group has never done this is because it's too much work. It is like 200 hours worth of tedious work to do that. And you have to have a studio and video editing skills, all these different competencies have to come together to do that kind of stuff. So we've done it. Our job was to do it and to spread it to as many people as we could, which has been about 17,000 people, including every MP, every senator in the country, 500 journalists. We've sent this quiz everywhere. So, and then of course, to our own mailing list. What we need you to do is we need you to post this everywhere you can. So send it to your relatives, ask your gun club to put it in their newsletter, ask your church group to put it in their newsletter, in their Facebook group, on Instagram, on Twitter, you know, spread this everywhere, because we want non-gun owners to go through this quiz and realize that there are very heavy gun control regulations in Canada. And you know what? If there's still shootings and there's gang activity and there's domestic violence and there's rural crime, it probably isn't a result of lax gun laws, which is the God's honest truth. And if it wasn't the truth, Bill Blair would sit in a room with me and debate me on national television, you know, or Najma Ahmed would do that. Even though I offered that $15,000 to charity, they won't do it. What an easy way to destroy the gun lobby. Well, apparently you have clear and overwhelming evidence and facts. I'm sure you could sit down at a table and make me look like a monkey, but for some reason, they won't do it under any circumstances, no matter how much money I offer to pay charities. They will not take that invitation. And you gotta wonder why, right? Anyway, apparently there's, you know, I'm too far down the food chain in the pro-gun community in Canada. Maybe that's what it is. But in any case, you gotta share those links. Now, there's a couple of other tools that we're developing for that campaign. Those will come out over time because I had a lot of work to do in a very short period of time. But I will get to those tools when I can. Shouldn't be too long. One of the other updates I want to talk about real quick is I did a video, a response on behalf of the CCFR, really not on behalf of the CCFR, but on behalf of our group on the concerning the Nova Scotia shooting. So if you haven't seen that, you can find that on firearmrights.ca. You can find it on our YouTube channel. Just scroll down a little bit on uploads, I believe. I could make that the featured video, but I guess I could do that. You'll find it on Twitter. You'll find that video everywhere. It's got 38,000 views in 2 working days. Basically, Friday afternoon, I created it and had 38,000 views this morning, which is Wednesday. So it's done really well. And I think it's just, it's truthful and it's honest and it's just like a conversation. So check that video out. And if you wouldn't mind spreading that around as well, I think a lot of people need to hear that one. All right. I've talked so long. I'm going to bring on Wilson real quick. And then after that, we'll go to Barry Holland. Wilson.
Giltaka.
All right. We got, we're trying to do a super quick update. So yes. I guess the first thing we'll talk about is, So last time we talked about CBC syndication, that we were taking CBC to task and we wanted a syndicated interview like they did gave to the doctors. And right. How did that turn out for us?
Well, to nobody's surprise, that turned out to amount to absolutely nothing. So, of course, we were told they had 20 days to respond. We were, however, you know, in contact and in conversation with one of the, you know, one of the editors of the show. And she said they would probably be getting a hold of us soon. I did follow up and send them your video statement that you did release, the one that's been all over social media. It's been wildly popular. And she said, oh, thank you so much for this. And yeah, crickets.
Yeah. Yeah. And so their strategy is basically they'll present one side of their, you know, of an argument, which is their narrative. And then they're like, now that we've gotten this complaint, definitely we're going to give you an opportunity. They drag it out for a couple of days. Then it's no longer relevant. You know, that topic is not in the news cycle any longer and it just drops off and they achieved what they want in the first place, which is a completely one-sided, propagandist narrative that they spread and they do it and they force you to pay for it. So it's not very good.
Nope. Just another day in, you know, mainstream media.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, did you check out that Calgary Herald opinion piece from Catherine Ford?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because just in case people don't know what we're talking about, I got it here. I'll read it. So anyway, it was your typical completely uninformed, full of lies, full of inaccuracies, hate-fueled piece in the Calgary Herald by some woman named Catherine Ford. And basically in the article, she talks about, you know, obviously anyone that disagrees with gun control, is advocating mass murder. And at the end, she says, the argument, specious as it may be, usually focuses on the law-abiding gun owners. And of course, law-abiding in quotes, because obviously we're not law-abiding. This is just a misnomer. And the fact, if ownership is not that only the criminals will have guns. I don't waste time and effort on pointing out the ridiculousness of such statements, except to say most homicides in Canada are committed by these, quote, law-abiding gun owners. So an absolute and complete lie. And so, I mean, you know, you were beating on her, you know, since that came out.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, I definitely got a little triggered by that because – number one, that's just a horrendous, outright lie. And for the Calgary Herald, I understand it's an opinion piece. You know, opinion does not equate to fact. However, when you're going to publish outright lies like that, that are designed to create fear and doubt in the minds of Canadians, it's just so unbelievable. Oh, yeah, I went to town on her yesterday on Twitter and just, I was pretty upset. Yeah.
Well, she's not on Twitter, I don't think, is she?
No, but I beat up the Calgary Herald and I, of course, wrote a scathing letter to Mr. Motley, who is one of the producers or I don't know who he is, but I think he's the chief editor of the paper. And I kind of went up one side of him and down the other. And what's grosser to me, too, she even, you know, she goes on to mention the failed gun registry. You know, somehow implying that would have made any difference at all when the Nova Scotia killer's firearms were smuggled from the U.S. and he doesn't have a license. What does the gun registry have to do with anything? And even more so, she thinks she's noble by standing on the backs of these victims for her soapbox when she's very clearly, rabidly anti-gun, a complete disdain for gun owners, for legal gun owners, and just total disinformation, total deceit, just awful, you know. And I demanded they remove the article from their site and issue an apology, which of course, you know, that'll come probably about the same time as CBC syndication. Never. But yeah, I just can't imagine going on these crazy diatribes about this, you know, where you are blatantly saying that if it wasn't, you know, for all these, if we had more gun control, that this wouldn't have happened. First of all, what that must do to the families of the victims who are reading this, you know, you're implying that we've somehow failed them. And that's just, you know, there's no words on paper law that could have prevented something like this. So yeah, just gross. Absolutely gross. That just was the worst thing I've seen through this entire awful tragedy, was this piece by Catherine Ford. Just disgusting.
It was. And I mean, it's full of the usual total garbage. I believe I read somewhere in there, you know, that that we should be registering our guns. And see if I can find it, because it's just, this is the thing. Well, overall, the big problem I had with it is she conflates licensed gun owners, people that would go through the process and the effort and the time and the intrusion on their privacy and the loss of, you know, semi-loss of some rights to get a firearms license and to maintain it. There's a lot of legal liability there and a lot of legal liability to even owning firearms. Those people should be conflated with mass murderers.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and it's like, well, I know that you weren't the one that pulled the trigger, but you look like the person that pulled the trigger. It is pure bigotry. Anyway, what I was looking for, I can't find it here, but I seem to remember. There we go. Why should the ownership of a rifle or a shotgun come without registration? Why should rural property owners not have to register their guns? Nobody wants to take their guns away. Just let the police know who owns what and where it is. If you want to know why registration is inappropriate, that's exactly why. They keep saying, no one wants your guns, you conspiracy theorists. I've said this before, right? But, you know, yet you register firearms, they reclassify them, they send you a letter, send us that gun in 14 days or you're going to go to jail. You know, like they totally do take your guns as soon as they're registered. There's thousands, tens of thousands of people have lost guns that way.
Just another day.
I don't know. We spent too much time talking about this trash anyway, but
let's move on.
This trash person. Okay. What is important is the board of directors elections coming up.
Yes. Let's move from junk people to great people. So the CCFR is looking for a few great men and women. Every year we take half of our board of directors seats and we refresh them. So we put them up for election and people can come. And, you know, if you've got an interest in playing a more active role in advocacy, this is something that might interest you. So we've got a article up on the website. It details what provinces are looking for new directors this term. There's one little difference this year. In Ontario, we're looking for two seats. Normally, it would just be one each AGM in Ontario, but we did have one vacated. So we've got a two-year term and a one-year term up for grabs. So have a look at that. There's a couple qualifications. You've got to be a member of the CCFR in good standing prior to March 1st. So you can't go buy a membership today and then become a director tomorrow. It doesn't work that way. You've got to have the power under Canadian law to sign legally binding contracts and documents, not have a criminal record for which you have not received a pardon for, be a resident of the province in which you are nominated, not be in a state of personal bankruptcy, and find two other CCFR members in your province who personally know you. So there's, you know, there's a couple things we're going to need from you. You've got to fill out the form. You've got to submit a decent quality headshot photo of yourself, which we will use for on the electronic voting website. And then a minimum 25-word bio. This does not need to be, you know, your entire life history. It needs to be a brief description of why you're interested, what qualities or skill sets you think you can add to the team, and a little bit about yourself. All of that needs to be submitted to me at the office here by May 29th at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And that's it. Then we'll get it out there. We'll let the members have their say, let democracy run its course, and we'll see where we sit after that. So exciting year coming up. So
good. Good. And yeah. Then one of the last things is membership cards. I was floating around on Facebook for a few minutes a couple of days ago, and I saw a few people say that they're still waiting for their cards.
Yeah. So unfortunately, the business that we have that prints our cards and sends them out to our members does not fall under the essential service regime here in Ontario. So they are local to me. However, they are not essential. So they are not open. So unfortunately, cards have been delayed, the printing of cards. So if you've signed up since this lockdown started, you may be waiting a little while. You can, however, send an email to info@firearmrights.ca if you would like to access your membership number and any information you need about your membership. You can access all the insurance information on the website under the insurance tab. It's posted there publicly for everybody. So you know, you may be a little while before you get that piece of plastic in the mail, and I know everyone looks forward to getting it, but bear with us. It is coming. It's just going to be delayed. And people keep asking, well, when will that end? And unfortunately, that's going to be up to Premier Ford to make that decision on when businesses can get back back to work. So yeah, I know that's not the answer everybody wanted, but the other good news about memberships too is if you are renewing, so if you were already an existing member and you're renewing, you may remember last year we did the 2019 CCFR member patches. Staffer Steve designed them. They were the new logo. They were sort of die cut, you know what I mean? Like cut around the shape. They were really cool, really wildly popular actually. So he's come up with another great idea for this year. Instead of just sending you yet another membership card when you renew, you're going to get a challenge coin. So they've been ordered. We're waiting for them to come. They're also delayed because they are not coming from an essential service. But they're really, really great little challenge coins. It's got the new logo on it, the old logo on it, and just a cool little piece of CCFR pride for your pockets. So those will be coming out once life returns to normal. So,
right on. Well,
yeah.
I appreciate the update. I think we're going to slide over and talk to Barry Holland, the author of No More Mr. Nice Guy. So I appreciate you coming on, and we'll probably talk to you next week.
All right, stay safe, Rod.
Hey, everybody, this is Rod from the CCFR. In 4.5 years, we've created the most sophisticated and influential firearm rights organization in Canadian history. And when I say we, I mean our team and all of you who have trusted and supported us financially and as volunteers. Together, we've produced television shows, made our presence very well known on Parliament Hill, and taken on the anti-gun establishment as never before. We are in unprecedented times in Canada and around the world. Our goal is to continue to develop the CCFR into an even more formidable organization to better fight for your right to own and use firearms when stability returns. If you can afford it, please continue to support the CCFR by keeping your membership current and/or donating. If you are unemployed, do not do these things. We are an organization with values, and family comes first. If you're in this situation and you still want to support the CCFR, do it by sharing our explainer videos, the podcast, our reports, or our TV show, which is now available for free online on the CCFR YouTube channel. We can come out of this stronger than ever. Look after yourself, your family, and your community. And thank you for supporting the CCFR in any way that works for you. All right, on the Skype, I've got Barry Holland, the author of No More Mr. Nice Guy. How's it going, Barry?
Things are going well, thank you. How are you, Rod?
I'm doing well, thanks. So for, you know, people out there that maybe haven't heard of you or the book, why don't we start with a quick description of your background? So, so people can kind of get to know you, and then we'll talk about the book, and I think people are going to be really, really interested and excited about it. So a little bit about yourself, Barry.
Sure, Rod. I started off without a specific career path, but back in the early 80s, I got in the Canadian military, joined the infantry and subsequently the military police. I did a fairly long stint. And then an organization called JTF2 was formed. And I ended up as an operator and a sniper with JTF2. And then sometime later, I left that organization, left the military, and became a security contractor overseas for quite a long time, working in various countries in North Africa, the Middle East, about 8 years in Iraq, a couple of countries in South America. And I had this burning in the belly to write a book that would help people in defending themselves, their family, and their property.
And so the book is called No More Mr. Nice Guy. So tell us a little bit about the book and you know, what you can expect in it, why you wrote it. What's the purpose of the book and what's it about?
The book, No More Mr. Nice Guy, is a guide to defending yourself, your family, your property in Canada. So it's basically broken into three general categories: the legal, the practical, and the tactical. The legal, if someone makes the assumption that they would defend themselves and their property and their family, then the legal explains to them in simple layman's terms the relevant laws. And my opinion really doesn't matter very much. Neither does the opinion of the police or Crown prosecutors. What really matters is how the courts have decided in previous cases. So I look to previous decisions within the Canadian judicial system on how judges ruled on very specific aspects of Canadian law relevant to defending yourself, use of firearms, use of force, and that kind of thing. And so if after reading the legal section, you decide from a moral standpoint, yes, you would defend yourself, then moving on to the practical section. So let's assume that you would defend yourself. Well, you want to be prepared when the time comes. So this section helps you prepare in all aspects of the intention to intervene in crime. For example, it tells you how you can prepare your home better, how you can assess the risk at your home, at your business, the risk within your family, and the steps you could take in being better prepared. And then the next section is the tactical. And let's assume that something has happened in the middle of the night and you feel compelled and the situation is urgent to intervene and you want to do that. Well, good tactics are very important and taking the right steps and doing the right things. So that's what's covered in the tactical part. And then the last section of the book is just a list of legal precedents that has a specific bearing on issues related to the book. So that'd be very helpful to a lawyer, for example.
So, you know, a book like this, I think, would be indispensable for anyone that has it rattling around in the back of their minds that they would use a firearm to defend themselves. And, you know, I've trained 4,000 people in my short training career. And there's a lot of people out there that actually get a firearms license that has it in the back of their minds. And of course, the anti-gunners will run in and be like, well, see, we told you if people want to use firearms to defend themselves. It's like, well, you know, it's funny because, you know, these people seem to think that it is morally objectionable to defend yourself and not allow yourself to be a victim of rape, assault, or murder, and that it's morally superior just to lay down and die or let those things happen to you. And for some reason, this is why they're always trying to paint gun owners as you know, sitting there waiting for an opportunity to use their firearms on other people. But the reality of it is that, you know, you shouldn't have to fall victim to those things. But in Canada, it's very difficult. So how much research did you have to go through? Like, how long did it take to write this book?
The research component was over the course of about 3 years. And of course, the focus for me was on the legal side, because the practical and the tactical I had experienced over my lifetime in the training that I'd received in various organizations, as well as the work I had done, you know, overseas. But that perception that you can't defend yourself effectively in Canada and you can't use weapons and you can't use firearms, that is a misconception. The law is quite clear that that is permissible. And there are a lot of judgments in favor of people who've done it. Now, the media, police, and politicians, depending on what side of the house they're on, often convey that misinformation, and that is it is not correct. You can use force. The criminal code is quite clear in section 25 that you can use force to overcome resistance.
You know, when we first talked, we had a we had a conversation a few days ago and just kind of get to know each other a little bit for this interview. And, you know, when I heard about the topics that you're covering in the book, you know, right away I have a concern because you yourself, Barry, you're not a lawyer. And, you know, in Canada, even if you use a firearm to defend yourself and it's lawful in Canada, it's the process that's the punishment. And so they like to throw charges at everybody and drag them through the entire system and destroy their lives, you know, in that regard, even if their use of force was appropriate in the circumstances. So, you know, I had a concern, and then you were telling me who some of the biggest customers of your book are. So why don't you tell me about that again, so everyone can hear what I heard.
Sure. Well, initially, of course, I was a little bit concerned about the reception that the book might get from members of law enforcement and the legal community. What I have found is that police people buy a copy of the book, they read it, and then they come back and they buy copies in multiples. And having investigated that, I found that what they do is they read it, they realize that it's a solid book, and then they get copies for their friends and families. Likewise, there's been several lawyers who have bought copies and then came back, and one lawyer has bought nearly 30 copies in different batches because he feels that things are going to get worse and that he would like to see all his friends and family have a copy of the book as a guide for them. And you can imagine, and it happened to me too, when people would ask me things like, hey, if someone breaks into my house, can I shoot them? Well, the answer is not, unfortunately, black and white, nor is it short. And so if you ask that question of a policeman or a lawyer, the answer that he gives or they give is probably on the safe side. They don't want you to misinterpret what they have said. So the good thing about the book is you can read through, get the information, and then review it and digest it and research it. And I had a lawyer recently who had bought a copy, and he said he read it twice. The first time he just read it through, and then the second time with a highlighter. And as he read through the second time, he looked up various points that I had made in the book. And then he has since referred the book to some of his partners. He's bought several to hand out to friends and family.
That's a great endorsement because as a lawyer, he can't be distributing information that's in connection with the law that's incorrect. There's liability there. So that's an endorsement of sorts that I find pretty comforting, especially if I'm going to rely upon that information.
Rod, if I may.
Absolutely.
Also, before I even published, I had a number of people who I know, criminal defense lawyers and a crown prosecutor, go through the book, and even members of Alberta Justice, senior people who I've known, you know, like my whole life, just to get their perspective, because not only is it the points of law, but also the readability of it. People need to be able to understand it. And that was a big part of the challenge of writing the legal section.
Okay. So now, you know, you've written this book, and it's on a pretty, I don't know what's the word I'm looking for. It can be a controversial topic, right, in our society, because we have the elite class in Canada that constantly tells us that that the only choice you have when facing, you know, a situation that could be deadly is call 911, which of course is, this is your first course of action if possible. But it's, you know, this is a tough book to write, and, you know, thus there aren't a lot of them. What compelled you to write this book?
Well, actually, it started off, my intention was to simply write a pamphlet or a long essay that I would distribute sort of online, friends, family, and that kind of thing. But as I progressed, I kept adding things like, what about road rage? There's so much misinformation about how a person should handle road rage. There's so much misinformation about when someone can engage someone with, for example, pepper spray. We're often told that it's illegal to carry pepper spray, which is false. And all kinds of issues with respect to use of force in various situations. So as I wrote the thing, and before I knew it, I had a book-sized kind of document together that needed to be worked out when I thought, you know what, people really need to know about this. And one of the things that always I felt really challenged with is I would hear news reports about some good upstanding person who stood up to criminals, and then they themselves were victimized by the legal system simply because they just did not know what they should do or should. And it's unfortunate. And when I started to research the book, of course, I looked to see if there was that currently existed of this nature, and there's nothing, nothing that I could find. So clearly, if I couldn't find the information in a, you know, a complete form, other people couldn't either, not at least easily.
Well, and they don't want to make it easy in Canada. And, you know, it's interesting, and obviously this isn't part of the book or anything, but I a lot of people ask me questions about this kind of stuff. And it's, and I get that question often, both in my training business, and just as being in my association with the CCFR. And a lot of people ask the question, well, you know, why does the government and the police and the media and anti-gun groups, and just why are so many different people, you know, groups in Canada always telling us that, you know, this self-defense with a firearm is inappropriate and, you know, it's not a legitimate reason to own a firearm, and all of these things to discourage that, either that idea or the culture. And that's actually an interesting question. And I'm curious to hear your position on it, but I have come to the conclusion that the reason, even though it's mentioned three times in the Firearms Act, in sections, now forgive me, I think it's 20, 28, and 117, that firearms, you know, are used for protection of life. They tell us that that's not a legitimate reason. I think the reason is that if they qualify that firearms could be used as an appropriate means of defending yourself in the right circumstances, then it starts to get connected to one of your rights under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which is defense of person, right? So I think they're trying to discourage that because they don't want those two things linked, because firearms will start to look like a right to them. I mean, what's your opinion on that?
Well, again, my opinion doesn't amount to a great deal. However, Judge Dimitrik, in a Bray decision, wrote an outstanding decision. And it was a relatively simple case, but he went into great detail on the use of force, use of firearms, defending yourself. And one of the points he made, there are several great points. One of the points he made is there is nobody in this country would not be required at some point in their life to take up some sort of a weapon to defend themselves. And he referred specifically to the Prime Minister at repose in his own bedroom had to take up a weapon to defend himself against an intruder. And this in what is arguably the most protected residence in the country. So how much more so to the private person? He also then, he made a list of people who might be taking up a weapon to defend himself, to defend themselves. And it went something like this. He said, the jewelry store owner who keeps the 12 gauge behind the counter to defend themselves against robbers, the taxi driver who keeps a baseball bat to defend himself against unruly passengers, the nurse who works the late shift who keeps a stiletto in her purse, the wife of a violent estranged husband who carries pepper spray, the big city judge who keeps a pair of savage guard dogs to protect herself against home invasion, or, he said, the gentleman rancher who carries a handgun under his jacket to protect himself from two and four. Now, is that not an awesome statement by a learned judge who is looking at a legal decision that ultimately was never appealed? And he found that the accused was, in fact, not in that particular case. So that's the Bray decision. So that's just outstanding. So that's just not my opinion. That's the opinion of a judge.
Yeah, and a reasonable opinion at that. I mean, it's I think sometimes people in elite circles and in government, they forget that without the cooperation, without the social contract being intact, you know, our society, law and order, will break down. And our society, the way that we live it today, or the way that we lived it 2 months ago, isn't possible. So you cannot make unfair laws. You cannot use the state to hold people down and make them victims or allow them to be further victimized, and keep any semblance of respect for the government, which is essential for the government to operate. So no, that's fantastic. See, I didn't know that. So I'm really anxious to get to get a copy of the book and read it. It's probably going to be the first actual print book I've read in 2 years. So I'm really excited about that. So, you know, I think we've been talking for almost 20 minutes already. I could talk about this stuff all day long. This is only kind of just a short taste of what's to come as far as information from your book and yourself. Would you be willing to come back and do another interview with us? And I'll even put it up in the next 2 or 3 weeks. Would that be okay?
That would be great. Thanks, Rod.
Awesome. So Now, where can people get your book right now if they want it?
Well, they can go to a webpage. It's weprotectforyou.com and click on the NMMN tab. It's the No More Mr. Nice Guy tab. And from there, they can get all the instructions they need.
So We Protect For You, and it's F-O-R, not the number four.
Correct. Weprotectforyou.com.
Fantastic. Well, I really appreciate you coming on, and we're going to have to get another interview done as soon as possible.
Well, thank you very much. And people may also be interested that there's a Canada Fights Crime Facebook page that's No More Mr. Nice Guy as well.
Great. All right. So again, thanks for coming on, and we will talk to you soon.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
All right. That's going to do it for episode 64 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. You know, I really appreciate you guys coming back. Don't forget to share this podcast everywhere you can. And remember, tell people if they're looking for an update, say, hey, here's episode 64, or here's episode 62. They talk about that directly. Hear it right from Rod or Tracy. You know, if you want a CCFR update, this is the place to get it. It couldn't be easier. You don't even have to look, right? Because it's audio only. You know, you can clean guns or wash your car or, you know, lay on the couch or do whatever you want and just find out what's going on at the CCFR. I really want to thank Barry Holland for coming on. And again, you can find his book at weprotectforyou.com. And stay tuned for another interview with Barry next week. And next week is equally, if not more interesting. And we get into all kinds of really interesting things. And, you know, notwithstanding next week, I want to bring Barry back again because I could talk about this kind of stuff all day. So anyway, thanks again for Barry for doing that. If you want to support the CCFR and if you're in a position to do that, please go ahead and do that. You can become a member or you can donate or you can become a member of the CCFR Insiders. For details on that, go to patreon.com and search for CCFR. Other than that, thanks for all your support. Stay safe, everyone, and we'll see you next time.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.